Hello and welcome to The Top Story, a podcast with the headlines of the day from our correspondents around the world. I'm Tian Lu, coming up in this edition. Israeli tanks have pushed back into northern Gaza after its war cabinet delayed a meeting to decide on a response to Iran's attack. Jury selection has begun for former US President Donald Trump's criminal hush money trial. And the Shenzhou 18 crewed spaceship will be launched to China's space station later this month. We begin with the Middle East. Israel's war cabinet has postponed its third meeting to decide on the response to Iran's first ever direct attack on its territory. Western allies have eyed swift new sanctions against Tehran to help dissuade Israel from a major escalation. Meanwhile, Israeli tanks pushed back into parts of the northern Gaza Strip while warplanes continue to conduct airstrikes on Rafah. Sam Menick with the Associated Press reports from Jerusalem.
Rhetoric is heating up between Israel and Iran after Israel said it was going to respond to Iran's attack over the weekend. On Tuesday, Defense Minister Yoav Gallant said that Iran failed in its attack, but he said that anyone who fights Israel is going to be defeated. Israel's army spokesman Daniel Hagari said that it will happen in a time and place of Israel's choosing, and he said that Iran was not going to be let off the hook.
Besides, the cruise missiles, the rockets, the drones, firing 110 ballistic missiles is an escalation to the region. We don't just have defensive capabilities, we were proven on Saturday night. We have offensive capabilities, and we will know what to do and when to do and how to do.
Well, Iran has warned that if Israel responds, it is going to retaliate within seconds, it said, not within weeks, which has been done previously. But while Iran and Israel are having this war of words and everyone's waiting to see what happens, tensions are heating up on the northern border with Lebanon, where the militant group Hezbollah operates. Israel said that it killed a top Hezbollah commander. He was killed by a strike in his car in Lebanon. They said that he was responsible for a lot of the missile strikes into Israel. The war in Gaza and strikes continued. At least 11 people were killed in a refugee camp in the center of Gaza, including several children. And a lot of Palestinians say that Israelis are pulling people forcibly from their homes, specifically in the north of Gaza, and forcing them to move south. This happened, they said, in the city of Beit Hanun. Several people were taken and told to go to the city of Rafah. But they say that nowhere is safe. And there was a strike on Tuesday in Rafah, the strike that hit a house where several people were killed, including children. There's about 1.5 million people sheltering in Rafah, and they are bracing for what Israel says is going to be the next phase of this war, which is a ground offensive into Rafah. Israel says that the remaining Hamas battalions, about 4 of them, are inside Rafah and that they are going to come in, but it's unclear when that is going to happen. It's also unclear what is supposed to happen with this 1.5 million people who really have nowhere to go.
That was Sam Menick reporting. The United Nations say months of conflict have destroyed all universities in Gaza. The Office for Coordination on Humanitarian Affairs also warned of the consequences for Gaza's future. Jody Jacobs reports from New York.
The United Nations says that the situation in the Gaza Strip continues to deteriorate by the day. It reports that about 90% of school buildings located along Gaza's eastern border have been destroyed or damaged, among them all of the universities.
What is concerning for me in the long term is that, as we have known in many other contexts, education is fundamental to build peace, and I don't think that leaving hundreds of thousands of children without an education, and those who are enrolling in university will see just their dreams disappearing, admitting that they will survive this horrible war, it's certainly something that will have a heavy impact on Gaza.
Speaking via video conference to reporters in New York on Tuesday, the head of OCHA in the occupied Palestinian territory said that uncertainty is a daily occurrence for millions of Palestinians who have survived the conflict. Most concerning are the attacks on hospitals, which the Israeli Defense Force says Hamas uses as shelters. The UN says only a third of Gaza's 36 hospitals now remain functional.
Lastly, we have seen really very problematic, let's say, operation in hospitals. In Shifa, a couple of weeks ago, there has been a very heavy military operations, and our team have entered the following days and have to deal with a scene of terror, and the hospital is completely non-functional at this moment. The number of fatalities that have been reported has been important, but also, and more problematic, the number of bodies that has disappeared, that has been buried in or in the premises of the Shifa hospital or around the hospital, has been also problematic.
And while the World Body says humanitarian access to the Gaza Strip has somewhat improved, it still faces many challenges, something the Israeli government denies. Meanwhile, a panel of experts appointed by the UN's Human Rights Council says Israel had not exercised self-defense on April 1st when it attacked Iran's consulate building in Damascus. The report released on Tuesday states that Israel had not provided any legal justification for the strike, nor did it report it to the UN Security Council as required by the United Nations Charter. At the same time, the panel of experts say Iran's response was also a prohibited use of force under international law.
That was Jody Jacobs reporting from the United Nations. In North America, former US President Donald Trump's hush money trial has selected seven jurors so far after lawyers grilled the jury pool about social media posts, political views and personal lives. The selected panelists include an information technology worker, an English teacher, an oncology nurse, a sales professional, a software engineer and two lawyers. Trump has denied the charges and has called the judge overseeing his criminal case conflicted. Corinna Mitchell has more from near the courthouse.
Well, things moving along much more quickly than first anticipated in this case, but jury selection incredibly meticulous. Started off with 96 jurors coming into the pool, that dwindled down to just nine. More jurors were brought in. Each side is able to strike 10 jurors through the entire jury selection process for any reasonable cause. They were able to get that done before lunch. They took a break and then they came back after their break to deliberate about who they wanted to keep. And that's when social media posts became a really important part of this trial, because the Trump defense team came back and wanted to speak to certain jurors about certain social media posts that they had seen. For example, juror two had a social media post that said, quote, lock him up. Potential juror number six had a Facebook post that said, quote, want to beat Trump in 2024, and there was pictures of Biden and Harris in the background of that post. Further post from that prospective juror also asking, did you get picked? And his response, I go back tomorrow. Both of those jurors were dismissed. Opening statements then could come as early as next week. The judge did mention a name of 40 witnesses. They include a key witness against Trump, which is his former attorney, Michael Cohen. He's the one who allegedly paid that hush money, $130,000, to Stormy Daniels. And then former Trump aides Rudy Giuliani and Kellyanne Conway, also able to speak, and alleged former mistresses Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal.
That was Corinna Mitchell reporting. Turning to South America, a dengue outbreak is spreading across the continent. Infections and deaths in Peru have more than tripled this year amid climate change. Dan Collins asked infectious diseases specialist Augusto Tarazona at the Peruvian Health Ministry about the situation.
Peru is facing its worst ever outbreak of dengue fever. Once confined to certain regions, the debilitating and sometimes fatal disease has spread throughout the country. The number of cases and deaths are three times higher than the same period last year, with at least 117 confirmed dead from the disease and more than 134,000 cases.
What is currently happening is that the mosquito has been adapting to climate change and has been reproducing at a faster rate than in previous years, with lower temperatures. And it has also managed to expand throughout the length and breadth of our country.
The virus is transmitted by the Aedes aegypti mosquito, which has reproduced faster and in greater volume due to warmer and wetter weather, which is mostly caused by the El Nino weather phenomenon currently hitting the Pacific Ocean side of the South American continent.
The numbers are already higher than in all of 2017, the last time Peru experienced El Nino, which also triggered a huge dengue outbreak. The Pan American Health Organization reported last month more than 3.5 million cases and over 1,000 deaths in the region. In Latin America and the Caribbean, that is triple the number of cases from the same period last year, a year that topped records for dengue infections. The hardest hit countries are Brazil, with more than 80% of the deaths, Paraguay and Argentina. But proportionally, Peru is even worse, says Dr. Tarazona.
While it is true that Brazil and Argentina are facing epidemics, we have to consider the size of the population. And regarding the size of the population, Peru is being more affected even than Brazil itself. This is due to the incidence rates and to the mortality rate, which is much higher than Brazil and much higher than Argentina.
As climate change causes hotter and more unpredictable weather, experts say the spread of insect-borne diseases like dengue will become more commonplace.
That was Dan Collins in Lima. Finally, in Asia, the Shenzhou 18 spacecraft has arrived at the launch area on its carrier rocket. Shenzhou 18 will be China's first manned space mission this year. It will be launched to the China Space Agency. The China Manned Space Engineering Office says all equipment is functioning well at the launch site in northwestern China, and preparations for the mission will be carried out according to plan. Zheng Yibing has more.
Here we are at the Jiutian Satellite Launch Center. We're witnessing the very big step here for the Shenzhou 18 manned mission. Well, that is a transportation of the launch vehicles from the assembled building to the launch area. We're now standing close to the launch pad in front of us, and right behind me is a distance. It's a Long March 2F carrier rocket, codenamed 18. It carries the Shenzhou 18 spacecraft. While this transportation covers distance of 1.5 kilometers and takes about 1.5 hours. Well, after the completion, the launch mission will enter the new stage and will be carried out in the coming days. This is the first manned mission for China this year, and the new trail of Chinese astronauts, or the taikonauts, will take the spacecraft to fly to China Space Station to rotate with the Shenzhou 17 crew and conduct the new space experiments. It is a start for the launch mission, which will be carried out in the coming days. But for now, the launch center officially enters the final stage of preparation for this mission. In the following days, the staff here has to carry out some routine maintenance and inspect some components before this mission.
That was Zheng Yibing on China's Shenzhou 18 mission. Recapping today's headlines. Israeli tanks have pushed back into northern Gaza after its war cabinet delayed a meeting to decide on a response to Iran's attack. Jury selection has begun for former US President Donald Trump's criminal hush money trial. And the Shenzhou 18 crewed spaceship will be launched to China's space station later this month. That's it for this edition of The Top Story, a podcast that brings you world headlines every weekday. For more news in politics, business, sports and culture, you can subscribe to The Beijing Hour, a one-hour podcast news magazine program. We welcome and appreciate all ratings and reviews. I'm Tian Lu. Thank you for listening.